Good morning. Welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Ed Williams. Last week, EPA crews working on the abandoned Gold King mine near Silverton, Colorado, triggered a spill of 3 million gallons of toxic mine waste that flowed into the Animas River. That pollution flowed downstream through Durango and into the San Juan River in New Mexico. Governor Susana Martinez, Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper, and the Navajo Nation have all declared states of emergency over the spill. Farmers in northwest New Mexico have had to cut off their irrigation water. Towns and cities in the Four Corners area have shut off their drinking water intakes from polluted rivers. And the response efforts continue today. KUNM reporter Rita Daniels has been covering the story in Farmington, where the plume of contamination passed on Saturday. And Rita, can you tell us what you are seeing on the ground right now?
Good morning, Ed. Well, this morning, the water folks who work for the state engineer's office are out taking sediment samples from the river and the ditches around Farmington. They're doing this because when they inspected how well the gates on the ditches have worked when they were shut, when the sludge came down over the weekend, they realized that most of those gates on the ditches had leaked. There was seepage. It wasn't a tight seal. And so there's a lot of concern over what got through. Because, you know, they've told me that there's probable contaminants in all of those ditches. And, of course, the concern is if they get to go ahead to start using the water again from the river, once you open up a ditch, you'll stir up sediments and contaminants in the sludge, and it'll go right out onto the fields. And so there's sediment samples being taken right now, and everybody's basically waiting for the EPA and the Environment Department today. We're anticipating they'll be releasing some preliminary results of what actually was in the plume when it came through this area.
Well, we've been playing the waiting game for a while. They were taking samples of the river last week. Well samples are being taken by the New Mexico Environment Department. Have you heard anything about the samples that have been taken so far and what the results have been?
Well, you know what? We have not heard any of those results yet for New Mexico. Yesterday, the EPA did discuss some initial results of contamination closer to the spill site up in Colorado. I did go up there when those results were being released by the administrator of the EPA. But we have nothing for New Mexico yet. However, those results for Colorado, initially, the very preliminary results are looking good. People seem hopeful that the levels of what is in the water are low as far as the contaminants that we're concerned about.
You've been speaking to people in the area that have been affected by this spill. What sort of concerns are you hearing from the folks in the area of Farmington and that are living around the river?
You know, the main concerns really have to do with water supply and long-term contamination residual effects. So this stretch of the river that I've been covering is right when the river flows into New Mexico, and then it's about a 70-mile stretch before it hits the Navajo Nation. We're just talking some different jurisdictions here. So along that stretch, we have 15,000 acres of irrigated farmland. This is an agricultural vein in northwestern New Mexico, and you have a lot of livestock. And then you have domestic well use as well. There's fear that there's contamination in the groundwater. And what these contaminants will do over the next potentially decades. So well, those are the concerns I'm hearing. As well as also people running out of water for drinking water.
And it looks like, though, the Farmington and some of the other cities that have shut off their intake have enough drinking water to get by probably for the moment, right?
For the moment, let's leave it at that.
Okay. Well, Rita, thanks a lot for coming on, and best of luck to you as you continue to cover this story.
Yeah, my pleasure.
We're also joined on the phone by Donald Benn. He is executive director of the Navajo EPA. Sounds like we're having a technical difficulty there. Maybe we'll get Dr. Benn back on the phone. But until
hello.
Oh, Dr. Benn, hello. Thank you.
Well, actually, Ed, this is Rick Abbas. I'm the press officer for the Navajo Nation.
Yes, Rick. All right. Well, good to hear your voice.
Dr. Benn had to get off the phone. He was available only for a short time, and right now we're meeting with Administrator McCarthy, and we're on our way over to the river to take a look at the contamination of the water. So I do apologize for his unavailability right now.
Well, that's okay. Maybe you can tell us just really quickly what some of the issues that the Navajo Nation is having with the spill. I know that President Begay has been quite vocal in his criticism of the EPA over this. How has the spill of contamination into the river affected the Navajo Nation?
Well, the biggest issue is drinking water. Drinking water for two Navajo communities especially. They're located in Utah, the chapters of Annett and Old Jato. Mm. They were pumping water directly from the river, and that was the source of their drinking water for the community. So that's a big issue. The other two big issues are irrigation water as well as water for livestock. So those are three big issues that we have right now.
And how are people there coping with that issue? Is there water available at all to water livestock, to irrigate crops? Do you have a backup supply that you're using at this moment?
Well, we're having our Navajo Tribal Utility Authority and San Juan County. They've been assisting with some water tankers to provide water for the livestock and for some families. However, there's still no water for the irrigation, and that's a big concern for a lot of Navajos in this community, these communities along the San Juan River, Shiprock in particular. There's a lot of farms in those areas, and Navajo farmers, from this region are renowned for the produce that they provide. Especially the pumpkin, the corn, and these are all organic products. And now these farmers, they have a lot of concern that they'll be branded as contaminated or added chemicals.
Right.
So those are the biggest issues that we have at this time.
And Rick, one other question before I let you go. I know you need to meet with Secretary McCarthy, but the EPA, President Begay sent out a notice yesterday that the EPA was sending out waivers to tribal members to waive their responsibility or future liability. Can you fill us in about what that was about and what the government's concern is there?
Yes, Ed. I believe it was standard form number 95, if I'm not mistaken. The folks from the EPA that are out on the scene right now, they've been encouraging tribal members to file, to sign the document and file for a reimbursement claim. However, upon review of the document by our Navajo Nation Attorney General Ethel Branch, she realized that in so doing, they would waive their right to future reimbursements for, the long-lasting effects that this contamination will have. So President Begay was encouraging Navajo residents and voters, our Navajo residents affected by the contamination, to really review the document before they made a decision on signing it. And especially the fine print is what he was referring to there, that they would be waiving their right for any future claims for damages or injuries from the contamination.
Okay, Rick. Well, we'll let you go, and we'll follow up on that question later on in the program. Best of luck to you, and thank you for joining us on the phone.
All right, Ed. Thank you.
We're also joined in studio by Dr. Carrie Howe and Dr. Tom Turner. Carrie Howe is a professor of civil engineering at University of New Mexico. Dr. Turner, you are a professor of biology here at UNM. And I'd like you guys to weigh in a little bit on, what exactly we're looking at. Dr. Howe, can you tell us what we should make of these chemicals that are in the water?
Sure. So I've had an opportunity to look a little bit at the water quality data from the event. There's not, as you mentioned earlier, there's not been a lot that's been released, but EPA did release some data on Sunday from the first couple of days of the event, and that was up in the Colorado reaches. And what we saw there was the data that was released was samples of about 25 different metals that can be in water. And it's a common test for a group of metals. And they did samples of both dissolved and particulate, what we call dissolved and total metals in water. And so a couple of things we're seeing. There is about eight or ten metals that are significant in the water. The ones that are in the greatest concentrations are aluminum, iron, manganese, and then there are other metals that people have expressed concern about. Lead would be the next most significant concentration, and then also concentrations of arsenic and chromium and cadmium and some other things. What we see is most of that metals has been in the particulate form, and that's where people have expressed concerns about it settling to the bottom of the river and then staying there and being available to be mixed up in the next storm events. And so we see the dissolved metals moving downstream as the plume has moved by. Particulate sources of metals settling out, staining the bottoms of the river, staining rocks, and potentially lingering a bit longer.
What's your take on how long this could take to actually, you know, dissipate to the point where it's not an issue anymore?
Well, the biggest concern, and particularly from a drinking water point of view, is going to be the dissolved concentrations. The plume is moving through, and those dissolved concentrations from the data we are seeing are dropping back to pre-event levels. And so the effects on drinking water quality, I think, are going to be relatively short-term because the dissolved are the constituents of concern. The particulate forms, the water treatment plants that take the treatment plants that take water out of the river are actually designed to remove particles. I mean, that's what they do best because we're worried about things like bacteria and viruses in the water, and those are particles. And so any residual particulate matter of these contaminants are going to be removed by the drinking water plants when they do go back into operation.
And we also have on the line with us right now Ron Curry, who is the regional administrator for our part of the EPA's region, Region 6. Mr. Curry, thank you for joining us on the phone.
You bet. Good morning to you.
Good morning. We're getting some mixed messages. There's a lot of different information kind of floating around right now. We're hearing that this accident could take decades to clean up. Administrator McCarthy said recently that the water quality, though, was almost back to normal. I believe Governor Hickenlooper in Colorado just gave the go-ahead for water treatment plants in his state to start using the water again. Can you tell us definitively where we are now and how long, what's the time frame for cleaning up this mess?
Sure. You know, right now, just kind of some background that we've got here is that, as you know, and as it was mentioned earlier, as administrator, right as we speak, is over with the Navajo Nation. And then later on today, she'll be back here in Farmington visiting with a number of local officials like she did last evening. She came over here at the request of Representative Lujan and Senators Heinrich and Udall. And so she was over here last evening and visiting some water sampling that was taking place here in the Farmington area and looking at some of the work that the state of New Mexico and EPA had done together. So all of this information and all these observations that we are looking at right now will eventually give us the answer to the question as to how long this is going to take. But I think it's important for us all to know is that, as far as EPA is concerned, is that we're going to stay here as long as it takes to make this right for the community and for the Navajo Nation. So it's the key thing, of course, as we've been talking about, as you've been talking about, is looking at the data, whether it's the water quality data, and we continue to look at sampling has been done throughout the streams. And the Colorado data that has come in has looked at 24 metals that have been, you know, that we think may or may not be in the river for one reason or another because of the long-term leaching that's gone on in the mine over the years. So we look at down here in the Farmington area along this stretch of the Animas is that there are 9 intakes that are used for drinking water. And those 9 intakes feed 5 different systems in this area.
In New Mexico, you mean?
Yes, that's correct. And so one of the things that has been important to us, of course, is looking at data when the plume actually went through the Farmington area and started to come through New Mexico, which was on August 8th, which was the last Saturday. And the sampling has taken place every day since that time. And as the data comes back in, that will continue to give us more information. And the more information we get, the more information the state gets, will finally determine what steps will be taken going forward. So there's a lot of moving parts to this.
Right.
And we want to just make sure that we continue to get the data, get it well analyzed, and get it distributed as fast as we can to the people that are affected by all of this. And one of the things that we did, and it was first brought up actually by Representative Lujan as a suggestion for something for us to do, is establish an 800 number. It's actually an 844 number. And I don't know if you've given it out yet.
I haven't given it out, Ron, but we're going to have to take a short break. And you hold the line with us. We can give it out when we come back. And we do want to hear from you what concerns you the most about the gold mine spill. Has it affected you, someone you know? What do you have to say about the response and how it's shaping up? You can call our local number, 277-5866. Our toll-free number is 877-899-5866. You can also send us an email at callinshow@kunm.org or post comments to our Facebook page. We're going to take a short break here and back in a minute.
Edible Arrangements at 4770 Montgomery Boulevard Northeast in Albuquerque offers fresh fruit bouquets and chocolate-dipped fruit for any occasion. EdibleArrangements.com or 505-888-0100. Edible Arrangements is a valued supporter of KUNM.
Maybe just once in your entire life you have a car or a truck or tractor or RV that you want to get rid of. Maybe it has body damage. Maybe it doesn't run anymore. Maybe it's not worth fixing up and not worth much as a trade, where the driver can't drive it anymore. Anywhere in New Mexico, or even if it's parked in another state, we can pick it up wherever it is. You'll get a KUNM membership and a tax deduction. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Ed Williams. We're talking about the Gold King mine spill and its implications for us here in New Mexico. We have on the phone with us today a farmer, Jim Rogers, who has been irrigating water from the San Juan River right near where the spill is happening. And Jim, as I understand it, you haven't had irrigation water since this weekend. Is that right?
That's right. Good morning.
Good morning.
That's right. We shut our ditch down last Friday about noon in anticipation of that plume coming on down the San Juan. Excuse me.
So, Jim, you said that you got notification of this on Friday. Is that right?
They notified us. Sean Williams from the New Mexico State Engineer's Office notified us on Thursday morning. But we knew that the plume wasn't going to reach us till sometime Saturday, so we waited until Friday, kind of giving us an extra day, because the river had just began to clear up from being too muddy to use anyway. So we were just trying to get all we can. That's what farmers do, you know.
Right. Well, Ron Curry, can you tell Jim and the other farmers in the area when irrigation water will be available and safe to use again?
Well, that's what we'd like to know. You know, we had one of our reps from our ditch at the meeting last night. It's pretty vague. They tell us that we shouldn't use the water until officials tell us that it's okay. But I'm beginning to wonder if they're really going to tell us if it's okay. They may tell us what the levels are, and we can check the levels online. But I just kind of wonder if it's going to be our call or their call, you know.
Ron Curry, do you have a response to that?
Sure. I think one of the things that really needs to be emphasized here is that we are working closely with the state and the other jurisdictions up here. I was with the San Juan Water Commission yesterday, and as they look at all these issues that affect irrigators and the farmers up here within their particular jurisdictions, we're trying to provide them, working with the state, the actual water quality numbers that are available to them, and those will be coming out today. And as we talk with folks and listen to folks, And one of the things that we've tried to do is make sure that there's water available for livestock. And just yesterday, we approved a $500,000 work assignment for our folks to go out and get hay to bring in as needed for the livestock. And part of that we need to do that to get that properly distributed is make sure that people do have this 844 number that I'd like to just give you now.
It's go ahead.
1-844-607-9700, and there will be a live person that answers that phone and is capable of communicating either in English, Spanish, or Navajo.
Now, Jim Rogers, you farm out there in the area. Is this? Tell us about the timing of the harvest right now. Not to have water at this point in the growing season, what does that mean for farmers?
Well, there's a couple of things. Most farmers up here are in the third cutting for alfalfa. We normally get three cuttings per season, approximately 2 ton per acre is the average harvest up here, for each cutting. The third cutting is the best hay because the nights cool off a little bit and the alfalfa is of a better quality. So it's probably more than a third of the financial value of a hay crop. So it's a big concern. And then that's the reason that I am talking about, are they going to say, okay, now, you know, Monday you can start irrigating, or are they just going to keep talking about all the things that they're doing? Because we get pushed up. If it comes much after another week, it really begins to damage the crop. It won't grow. You have to cut it prematurely. That's bad for your plants for the future. Another thing is that the fall is also the best time to plant alfalfa, and most of the farmers up here are in a process of planting at least part of their acreage for the next season, and they're not going to be able to do that. They're not going to put that seed in the ground, which cost a lot of money, a couple of $100 an acre just for the seed, and then you've got fertilizer and then all the cost of the tillage, which they've already started. They can't do that without knowing if the water is going to be available in September, because you normally need to have alfalfa in approximately about the 1st of September for the next year if it's going to do anything.
So this is a pretty crucial time for farmers, and
it's a very crucial time, and it's been a bad year for farmers already because of the rains. And there's been rains are hard to schedule your cuttings. Just like me, my first cutting, I was not able to put up one bale of hay that hadn't been rain damaged. That's the first time that's ever happened to me in approximately 40 years. And usually you can schedule between, but it's been so. Radic's not the word, but there's been enough rain, which sounds like it would be a good thing for a farmer, but in our case, it's not. You know, it doesn't work that way up here, you know.
So. Well, Ron Curry of the EPA, is there any financial assistance available to farmers like this, or are they bearing the burden of this accident? I mean, what options do people like Jim have that are, you know, at risk of losing some serious money over this accident?
Well, right now it's important to note that we are providing water for livestock.
Right, but Ron,
irrigation, as we move forward on this, we are going to go in and take the necessary steps to make sure that if there's been any loss or damage, that we engage with the farmers to make sure that those issues and those dollars are covered.
Yeah, of course, you know, farmers like Jim, the livestock help doesn't, you know, that doesn't help them at this point. And, you know, a lot of questions floating around out there, as well as some Facebook questions we're getting in, coming in, asking about what was the EPA doing up in the mine anyway? This was a private business. I didn't see a Clean Water Act permit for the mine. And of course, it didn't have Superfund protection. That's been in the news. But can you tell us a little bit about why EPA workers were working at the Gold King Mine in Silverton in the first place? What was going on there?
Well, the Gold King Mine is a mine that's been actually around since the 1920s. And it's been problematic over the years because of the connection of the tunnels and the various plugs that have been put in by some of the companies over the years. So the agency was working up there doing due diligence, trying to make sure that there wasn't any sort of spillage that would go into the river. And that was our effort to go up there. There are a lot of mines. There are thousands of mines in the western part of the United States. And this Gold King mine is one of those up there that had traditionally been leaching into the river for many years. And so we had been working with the community, trying to make sure that there were adequate protections that were put in there to reduce the leaching that was going into the river. But I want to go back, if I can, to talk about the water, the livestock, and the irrigation that we are making sure that is taking place today. We've been working with the communities to ensure that happens as we move forward on this. And if people are having problems, again, I'd refer them to the 844 number and make sure that we are made aware of any specific problems that a farmer or an irrigator is having.
Go ahead and give that number one more time, Ron.
You bet. 844-607-9700.
Hey, this is Jim Rogers. Can I ask him a question?
Yes, of course. Go ahead, Jim.
The problem is really simple. There's no water. I mean, you know, there's not any other issue. You can, when you're farming, it's the real world. You either have water or you don't have water. And if you don't have water, the question is when are you going to have water so that you can make the plans for what's going to happen, if anything, you know? And that's what I want to know is, are you going to tell us when it's time, when we can turn water back into the ditches?
As we look at this data that has just come out, and we're looking at the comparing the data to the pre-event conditions to after the plume has gone through, and that data, it will be discussed very thoroughly throughout the course of the next 24 to 48 hours. And from that data, there will be the results that will help determine the next steps that everybody's going to take, all the jurisdictions, whether it's the state or the county or EPA, as we work together to try to solve this. So this data is out, and the decisions are out there, and discussions will be taking place.
Well, but Ron, as you're aware, a lot of people are really fed up with the way that the communication has been going on this. We've had all kinds of people criticizing the EPA for not letting farmers know in time. So I'm sure, you know, to hear that things will happen in their due time is not sufficient for a lot of people.
And that's understandable. And because when you have a situation like this, communication is important. And what we've tried to do and been very cautious about it is provide accurate communication. What we don't want to do is provide information or data that we will, you know, feel that could possibly mislead decision makers, mislead individuals as to what is going on. So we are trying to provide accurate, well-vetted, analyzed information to people so that in the long term, it's going to provide them with the most benefit from this data that we've taken and these samplings that we've done. So we're very aware of the need for urgent transparency, but we are also very aware that we want to make sure that science dictates what we do and what sort of decisions are made.
Well, one more question, Ron. The EPA has claimed, you know, full responsibility for this spill, Administrator McCarthy saying that several times, but the EPA didn't cause the pollution that's there. There are a lot of fingers pointing at you, but not maybe as many pointing at the mining company. And I'm wondering what kind of liability, you know, your agency is paying for a lot here. What is the mining company paying for? This is a privately owned mine. What responsibility do they have?
You know, those are issues that we're going to address going forward. There are a lot of issues around these mines. You are absolutely correct. And, you know, these mining operations have been going on, certainly up in the Colorado area, for 100 years. And so it's important, and I've heard many of the community members here in the Farmington area over the last 24 to 48 hours to say exactly what you just said, is that we need to start looking at long-term strategies to address these issues so that the communities are not surprised again by some sort of mine accident or some sort of mine blowout where there's a spill called. And so I hate to just run off on you, but I've got several people that are waiting to visit with me up here in Farmington. But I do appreciate the opportunity to be on. And if you've got any other questions that we can answer, just let us know. We will get back to you. But I really appreciate you letting us be on.
All right. Thanks, Ron, for coming on. Ron Curry, Regional Administrator for Region 6 of the Environmental Protection Agency. And we are joined in studio by Senator Martin Heinrich. Senator, welcome.
It's good to be with you.
And thanks for coming by. You know, Senator Heinrich, this is the second show we've done on an abandoned mine disaster this summer, talking about the Church Rock tailing spill that still hasn't been cleaned up from the 70s. In New Mexico, we've had the spill in Cuesta that has contaminated
rivers on the Red River.
How prepared are we for another spill? How does this keep happening, and how prepared are we for another spill?
Well, I think what it shows is that the existing policy simply doesn't work. For 143 years, since the 1872 Mining Act was passed, we've been giving away federal minerals with no royalties being returned to the American people. And what that means in to a community like Farmington, to the Navajo Nation, to any of the communities along the Animas, is that there is no dedicated funding stream to make sure that these mines get cleaned up. This isn't the first spill on the Animas. We had a horrible spill back in the 70s that had very high levels of heavy metals. And we don't have the resources. We need mining reform legislation to be able to dedicate funds to clean up these mines. And I think Ron Curry said there were tens of thousands. I've seen estimates as high as 500,000 nationwide. And certainly most of that is concentrated along the Rocky Mountains in New Mexico, Colorado, Utah, Arizona, and then right up the Rocky Mountain spine to places like Montana and Wyoming. And I've seen data to suggest that as many as 40% of our mountain headwaters that we rely on for drinking water in the northwest part of the state, even down through the Rio Grande region and municipal places like Albuquerque, have been polluted by these abandoned mines where the mining company disappeared years ago. They were the responsible party, but if you have a subsidiary, when it no longer is profitable, they can declare bankruptcy, and the American people, or the people of Farmington, or the Navajo Nation, or the people in Cuesta are left holding the bag.
Wait a minute. So this is what I don't understand, because it seems to me that the company should be the responsible party here, even if it's abandoned and they created the mess and didn't properly clean it up.
Well, that works with a large company like the situation currently in Cuesta, where they're still working on a cleanup plan. But oftentimes what's happened is you've either had mom-and-pop operations that disappeared years ago, or in many cases there is a subsidiary that when the profitability of that local mine runs out, they declare bankruptcy, they disappear. And the American people, the EPA, the New Mexico Environment Department, are left holding responsibility for all that pollution when all of the public minerals in many cases, and many of these are mines on public land, on Forest Service land, on BLM land, and the American people are left with all the responsibility and none of the resources and profits from that.
Let's go to a phone call from Sarah. Sarah calling us from Lamy. Hello, Sarah. Thanks for your call.
Hi. I graduated from St. John's years ago in Santa Fe, but I am from Louisiana. I was living on the Gulf Coast when the well was blown. And 3 million, well, we had a lot worse happen. I wanted to let y'all know that there has been a tremendous amount of cover-up. The seafood is not safe to drink. And so I want the, you know, anyone that is, you know, left, right, and center, you know, if you got a farm, this is a permanent hit. You don't need a test enough, man. Look at it. It's heavy metal, toxic to all life forms, and it is a catastrophe.
Thank you, Sarah.
You need independent. You need to bring in some universities and do independent testing from the EPA. Needs to be, and test aerosol. It is the aerosol. I mean, it's not just in the water and the soil.
Thanks, Sarah. I appreciate your call. You know, of course, there is a lot of suspicion and mistrust going around about the testing that's taking place. Did you want to say something, Dr. Howe, about how that...
You want to talk about animals?
Well,
Dr. Turner.
Well, I could say that, you know, it's interesting that we're bringing up costs here because, you know, there are two concerns. One, from a biological perspective. One is the acute effects of these heavy metals, the acid in the water, and its effects on fish, its effects on aquatic invertebrates. which feed into, you know, the entire system. So the invertebrates, for example, when they hatch from the river, and all trout fishermen know this, they fly up, they become food for birds, they become food for insects, terrestrial insects. And so these metals can move out of the system and into other parts of the riparian areas around the river. So the acute effects appear to be fairly in control. I mean, there have been some tests to look at fish and their response. It's these chronic effects, these long-term effects, the accumulation of these metals in tissues of organisms and plants, and how that then affects the system. It affects perhaps productivity. So, you know, when we think about the effects on recreation, farming, everything we do in the Southwest practically depends on water. And so these are critical concerns and ones that I think need to be followed up on.
We're going to have to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back to follow up on this thought. You're listening to the KUNM Call-In Show live from the University of New Mexico. We're talking about the Gold King mine waste spill. That spill was triggered by an EPA team that was working on the mine cleanup. What was your reaction to that news? Call 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866 locally in Albuquerque. Toll free 877-899-5866. Comment on Facebook. That's KUNM Radio. Send us a tweet at KUNM News. We'll be right back after a short break.
Skip the hassle of finding a buyer for that old vehicle, especially if it's going to cost a lot to get it ready to sell. If you have anything with an engine, we'll spare you the hassle and expense. Plus, you'll get a tax deduction, a KUNM membership, and you'll feel so good knowing that your donation is helping to keep this program on the air. It's so easy. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Well Woman Radio looks at issues from a woman-centered perspective and maintains that if women are lifted up to achieve their greatest level of health and well-being, they will in turn support their families and communities, and everyone benefits. Join us this Friday morning for Well Woman Radio at 8 a.m. right here on KUNM.
We are back. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're talking about the Gold King mine waste spill and what it means for New Mexico. And Dr. Turner, before we left off for the break, you were talking a little bit about your concerns about wildlife impacts for this. Can you tell us what's your take on the impacts for the ecosystem of this particular spill from the Gold King mine, you know, both in the short and the long term?
Well, you know, short term, you know, the initial concern was just, you know, a big die-off of aquatic life. You know, fish and insects are directly affected by these sorts of events, depending on the magnitude. And this was obviously a huge magnitude event. It was stunning in it, you know, some of the photographs that came back. But Kerry Howe pointed out that there's sort of this dissolved fraction and this sediment or particulate fraction. The particulate matter is a little bit worrisome because, you know, as the dissolved plume moves out, you know, this particulate matter is available to organisms, and they can process it, and it gets into the food web. And essentially what we see are these heavy metals start to bioaccumulate in other organisms, fish, for example. Now, it's interesting to note that fish accumulate these toxins in certain tissues, and thankfully for the recreational fishermen, on the animus. Usually it's not muscle tissue, which is what we tend to like to eat. But you know, and then there are effects that as I stated before, you know, the movement of organisms out of the river into the surrounding areas, and the movement of water through irrigation or also through flooding and things. One thing we'll need to watch is some of the flood patterns and the movement of these sediments as they move downstream, and ultimately they will be flushed downstream to some extent. So we might see some recovery. We might see some. We might see an amelioration of these effects over time. And so, it's going to be important to monitor this.
Any effects on human health that you're concerned about?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously, lead is a huge concern. These heavy metals are a huge concern. You know, as drinking water is tested, and you know, we know that these particulates are removed from drinking water, there's very strict standards. Generally, the concern is less for direct, you know, impacts of human health, but through, you know, bioaccumulation in organisms, and then the effects on crops. That's going to be something that's going to need to be looked into.
Senator Heinrich, I know you need to leave, but tell us what you're doing to address this program in your post as a senator. Any legislation that you can tell us about?
Absolutely.
How are you going to make sure that this gets addressed?
You know, first and foremost, it's been about response, and our team has been coordinating with EPA and as well as the local and tribal communities to speed up a response that initially was unacceptably slow. I think we're seeing a lot of that now, and now we need clear direction, and you heard that in the interplay between Ron Curry and Jim. When we do have the data, someone needs to make the call and say, this is the safe level, and now it's time for people to begin to be able to use that water, whether it's for drinking water or irrigation. There is going to be a longer-term response as this plays out, but I think we have to start talking as well about how we prevent this from being just another spill. And we've had this play out over and over and over again, and it's why I'm working on 1872 Mining Act reform. I think we need to create a long-term funding stream to start cleaning up these mines, because even before this terrible spill, that mine was leaching heavy metals and acid into a tributary of the Animas River. And you can see that all across southwestern Colorado and in far too many places in New Mexico, where abandoned mines on a lower level, but on a daily and a chronic level, are moving toxins into our watersheds. And we need to have a way to clean that up and stop these spills before they happen.
You're up against a law that's very old and that people have been trying to reform for a long time.
Passed in the gold rush.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it reasonable to think that you're going to be able to get anything done on that?
Boy, I tell you what, if people can't look at the pictures of the Animas River that look like tang and say, we need some way to make this better and to prevent it from happening in the first place, then there's something deeply wrong.
Well, thanks for joining us, Senator Heinrich. I know you have to leave. Tell us where you're off to next.
Today we're actually dealing, we're going to be out at Kirtland Air Force Base, where we've been working for a long time to get the Air Force to clean up the fuel spill there. We're making some very encouraging progress there in terms of pump and treat finally, and so we're going to be at an event there. Tomorrow we'll be with the president of the Navajo Nation and a number of folks in the Farmington community looking at the impacts on the ground on irrigation, drinking water, and trying to find out when we're going to hear the call to be able to make some decisions about use of that water again.
Well, thanks for joining us.
We'll
cut you loose and let you get on your way.
Thank you very much.
To address yet another environmental issue that is going on here in New Mexico, the Kirtland Air Force Base jet fuel leak. And on the line with us right now from the New Mexico Environment Department is Allison Major. Hi, Allison. Allison, are you with us? Sounds like we lost Allison, but I would like to...
Hey, it's Jim Rogers. Can I stick in here?
Jim, yeah, sure. Go right ahead. Jim Rogers, the farmer.
And Senator Heinrich, you know, he's the first person that I've heard actually say that he kind of understands that, you know, there is a deadline as far as use of this water. You know, we're concerned about the, about being able to use it, on our crops, but we're also concerned about the effect that we might have on our neighbors if we... put this water into our ditches. And I'd just like to go back and ask the biologist, you know, what long-term effects or what immediate effects would we have putting this water back into our ditches? Our ditch is pretty short. You know, it's only 7 miles long, and only about half of it is concreted. But some of these ditches are 20, 25 miles long. And I'd kind of like to ask him what immediate effects and long-term effects that we might be, wishing on our neighbors by beginning to transport this water out of the river.
I'm glad you brought that up, Jim, because our reporters, Marisa DeMarco and Rita Daniels, have been running into that same question out there as they're covering this issue. A lot of farmers concerned about health impacts and the long-term impacts of this residual pollution on their irrigation ditches. Tom, what's your response to that? Do you have a take on what that danger could be if it's there at all?
Well, you know, Jim, first I'll say it's not my area of expertise, but I will tell you that, you know, the expectation is that there's going to be some level of these metals into the ditches. A lot of the sediments we're hoping will settle out, and there'll be a relatively low level ultimately that's going to be in there. You know, generally the uptake from plants is a little bit slower, and at a lower level than it is from animals. And so, that the biggest concern generally, and people have been looking at these heavy metals for a long time because they track this sort of bioaccumulation process where in the highest levels of the food chain, like let's say, predators and things like this, that's where you start to see these toxic effects because these organisms accumulate these toxic metals in their system. And so, in general, I think in long term, I would like to say that the effects should be at least ameliorated over time.
Let's go back to the phones. I think we have Allison Major from the New Mexico Environment Department with us. Are you there, Allison?
Good morning, Ed. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Thanks for joining us. We're talking with a farmer right now, Jim Rogers, out in Farmington, who's concerned about the residual contamination from this spill in his irrigation ditches. I'm wondering what kind of work New Mexico Environment Department has been doing on that end. Are you working with the irrigators, with the farmers, with the ranchers address this issue?
We are. It's a statewide coordinated effort. Governor Martinez immediately coordinated agriculture, homeland security, the environment department, and others to get on the ground for multiple issues. Water is fundamental, not only to crops and irrigation, but to health and to recreation. And Tom Blaze, the state engineer, has been coordinating with Cabinet Secretary Ryan Flynn of the Environment Department in terms of our issuance of safety precautions for the whole region, which include no ditch use because of sediment deposition potential. So, yeah, we're on the ground. We were on the ground immediately. The Martinez administration released $750,000 by declaring an emergency with her executive order. Environment freed up $500,000 from our emergency hazardous waste fund on Friday of last week.
Jim Rogers, are you still with us?
Sorry, I'm still with you.
It sounds like we lost Jim, our farmer. I wanted to have a follow-up question with that. But Allison, that does bring up a question that I have for you, which is, the New Mexico Environment Department is kind of doing a all-hands-on-deck effort right now in response to this spill, but I'm not sure what kind of responsibility the state agency should have with a federal problem like this. Can you tell us where does your responsibility end financially and, in terms of your jurisdiction over this issue?
That's a tremendous question, Ed. And, when it comes down to it, this is a real body blow. Water is life. It is fundamental. And so issues of responsibility and the blame game and who's going to pay for what, we're not going there yet. We're focused on the problem. We're focused on getting water to the people. We're focused on getting data to the people, which we post as soon as we get it from our testing. We were out much earlier getting water samples from the surface of the river on Friday from the plume when it hit on Saturday. We've got those results posted. We've got results from the EPA, and the only results we've gotten from them are for the upper Animas River. Those are posted on our website. As soon as we get anything, we post it for the public. We've got results from the city of Farmington. The website is nmedriverwatersafety.org. And we're putting the information up as quickly as we can go, and we're addressing the issues on the ground in concert with the EPA now, who is going out in the field with us and testing alluvial plain wells. We're working with the EPA, expecting to move forward and get into more of a handoff mode. But when someone's lying bleeding on the side of the street because of a body blow, you don't just drive by and say, not my job, wait for the ambulance. You get out there and you help, and that's what we've been doing.
Of course not. Not to stand by and, wait idly. I'm just wondering about what responsibility taxpayers here and your department should have, in terms of this mess, which wasn't caused by a state party or a business operating in the state. But we can get back to that later, because I do want to ask you before we run out of time about the well test results that you're running up there. I know that you've been taking results from people's water wells that are near the river in the floodplain. And what can you tell us about what you found in terms of toxicity in those samples?
The preliminary results are looking fairly positive. We're looking forward to the time or the day when a lot of the safety precautions against using the water for drinking, bathing, ingesting, watering livestock can be lifted. But they can't be lifted yet until we're all on the same page with the separate pieces of sampling that are going on from both surface water samples from the river itself as well as from alluvial plain wells. But one of the determinations our hydrogeologists were able to get certain on is the Animas River. It's in more of a Piedmont area. It's a fast flowing stream up in Colorado. It's a different kind of river up there. Sediments move differently when it's a fast moving stream versus a slower moving Piedmont area. So one of the first things we were able to determine from testing nearby wells to the river is that it's a gaining stream. That means water flows from the plain to the river, not the other way around. We were not finding river water contamination in the nearby wells. That's a tremendously good sign. Now, that gaining river concept can change when seasons are drier with the winter time, but for this moment in time, for this summer, it is a gaining stream, which is good. The groundwater flow is flowing in a direction that does not bring sediment to people's domestic wells.
Allison, what are you doing to address the existing mines in New Mexico? This is certainly not a problem that's limited to Colorado. Is the department focusing on that in any way at this moment to make sure we don't have a repeat in our state of what just happened in Colorado?
We certainly will team with Energy and Minerals Department, Energy, Minerals, and Natural Resources Department that oversees mining operations in the state. But right now, the focus is completely on the ground with the problem at hand. And certainly there's a precautionary tale to be done, to be learned from, you know, a preliminary investigation for a pump and treat system, which is what the EPA was working on doing at the time of the accident, for the exact techniques that were used and exactly where the fatal flaw occurred. Until that particular specific about how the accident occurred, it would be difficult to apply a lesson learned from the event to our mines, but we continue with our regulatory oversight for environmental safety related to New Mexico mines.
Well, Allison Major of the New Mexico Environment Department, thanks for joining us. It looks like we're running out of time, and it's too bad because I did want to follow up with some other questions, but we'll keep covering this issue. Our reporters Marisa DeMarco and Rita Daniels are out in the field as we speak in Farmington, covering the story as it develops, so keep tuned to KUNM for more news as it comes. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. Thanks to our guests, Carrie Howe of UNM Civil Engineering, Tom Turner of UNM Biology Department, Senator Martin Heinrich, Jim Rogers, Rita Daniels, Allison Major of the New Mexico Environment Department, and Rick Abasta of the Navajo Nation. If you missed part of this program or want to hear it again, you can find it and past episodes on our website, kunm.org. We're also podcasting the show on iTunes. Jefferson White was our engineer today. Rashad Mahmood was our assistant producer. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation. Find out more online at publichealthnm.org. I'm Ed Williams. Thanks for listening.